Welcome everyone you are listening to and perhaps watching Calling the Audible. I'm your host, Pease De La Reese. For one last time until we finally get the smallest of vacations after the FPF Cup. This is the fall season for myself, for my co-host, Simon Dashnik.
What's up?
For Eagle and Master Control. Used to be a small level of repose where we can catch our breath, recharge your batteries, but you all are exhausted.
It was a good time. It was like four months of please don't talk to me. Give me a good nine to ten weeks of get out of my face. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk to bees every day for 9 weeks.
Yeah,
and then we'll talk in November.
We're talking through November.
And now all we do is see each other.
Yeah, well, especially Eagle and I now with Hot Sauce, we don't have a break from each other.
I have no clue what that is.
It's Hot Sauce Sports.
I don't know.
Thank you, Simon.
It's not related to FPF.
Your clever plug. For those of you who want to watch it, it's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Where we talk about sports and butts.
Really? Talk about butts?
This week, yeah. And masturbation.
Lots of masturbation. Butts and sports.
Yeah.
Butts and sports, nice.
And a variety of other topics, but not FPF. That's this show where we talk about FPF. Back in the day, I would have been so calm in fall. I would have been able to see a ridiculous post by a media member and laugh it off. But today, Marc-André Desaulniers, dude, I love you, bro. And I'm all for differing opinion. I like people bringing different ideas to the fold. I like to have thoughtful discussion. But in order to have thoughtful discussion, you need to think. You need to listen to what other people are saying. I love you. You didn't need to take that post down. I'm all up for it. And if anyone has solutions, by the way, to the cap issue, for those who didn't see it on Facebook, it's no longer there. The issue of having players play either professional or college or university level ball and then play in FPF with introductory level ratings. I agree. The system we have isn't perfect. However, if anyone has an idea for a rule that is both equitable and enforceable, I'm all ears. Until then, you're all ears. You're listening to us on Calling the Audible. Simo,
well,
welcome to the roadshow.
Hey,
that's what we say to FPF media members when they lose their final game and don't make it to the finals. Simo, what happened between you and 2.5 Dance?
It was a good game, man. Honestly, I'm a bit shocked. I wasn't expecting it to be this close.
You're supposed to lose by more.
Yeah. No, we played, both teams played well. It was a close game. We got intercepted on the first drive. Shocker. And then we kept it score for score for them. We had four plays before half, managed to score to go up by one before halftime, sort of canceling the interception. And in the second half, there was one drive late in the game where we couldn't score. Got turnover on downs at the two. They scored back with go up by 10 points. When we scored, we got about 4 minutes. We drove the field, scored 36-32. Didn't go for the PAT to save time. Forced a quick three and out. We had four plays. And we couldn't score on the last bit of the game to win.
Who was your rusher in this game?
Darren. Just Darren.
Remember when I told you the person who rushed in this game should have been Justin Blanchard?
Listen, I don't disagree with you. I think he played well. Everybody played decently. We got the stop when it mattered, right? We were down by 4 points. We need the ball back. We got a three and out. That's the only drive that actually ended up mattered. We got four plays. We should have been able to win. Did not. That's it.
When Joey Taylor completes 72% of your passes, 72% of his passes, it's simply for one.
He threw like a 30-yard pass, man. I was shocked.
He does that. He absolutely does that. He wants you to bite in, and then he'll take a shot over the top.
Yeah, he throws those 50, 20 yards, but that was actually like from past midfield to Danny in the end zone. That's pretty good.
But again, so the issue is anytime you see him to have that high completion percentage, it's always the fact that Russia's not getting to him.
They played the typical Joey Taylor offense, and that group that they had with Savag, Danny DeMore, Dom Benevento, even Zach Albergill, they sort of bought into the system, and obviously Matthew Rapsik.
It works.
But it takes time to sort of understand what you're doing, right? Like the first week you do it, you're going to make a mistake as a receiver because you don't necessarily see.
And you're going to be like, what the hell is this? What am I running? What am I doing?
Why is four guys running the same pattern? I don't get it.
At 2 yards apart.
But then as the season progresses, you saw that their offense sort of got rolling and they played better. And this week was one of those weeks where their offense really clicked. Everybody was doing their thing and they marched pretty easily, to be honest with you. Like they scored on pretty much every drive except that one last drive. And I've known, like, Joey played a phenomenal game. Even the team offensively was very good. Everybody made some plays. It was a close game. I think it was a fun game for everybody who was involved. And listen, we lost, but I'm not mad at how it ended up. It was a fun game to play.
Did your defense hold enough?
It was a weird game. Like, whenever...
Because that's what you got to do.
There's a guy on our team...
The Joey Day Taylor defense, offense. You need to hold.
So, there's a guy on our team, Paul, who's hands down our best player, got hurt on the first drive, trying to go up for a ball, and he rolled his ankle. At the end, but it didn't look so bad because he kept on playing, just couldn't play offense anymore. But then it would have been me on defense, so he sort of, you know.
Him on one
took
foot.
Took one for the team. After the game in the locker
room... It's Paul LaPass, right?
Yeah. He took his shoe off and the sock off. It was so bad. His ankle was so swollen up. I felt bad for him. I called him a pussy during the game because he didn't go for a pick six. Like, he was there and he sort of stopped.
He just didn't want to run.
Like, he was running towards the ball, saw it, and sort of stopped right before and just put a hand on the ball and patted it down. He's like, what are you doing?
I'm waiting for my phone to load the next page.
Okay. He was doing. He turned around to me. He didn't say anything. After the game, I saw his ankle. I was like, I feel bad for calling you a pussy for that.
I mean, yes. Yes and no.
Yeah, it really felt like he had no strength whatsoever. It was hurting him.
Dreambreakers beat Les Flamands with 31-18. I said when this playoff started, I thought Dreambreakers and EZW would be the strongest two teams from this pool. EZW lost by a point, but Dreambreakers win fairly easily, 31-18, scoring 25 of those points in the second half. Nick Schaefer, two interceptions. Despite the amazing effort by Thomas Kutsu, who caught seven passes, 137 yards, two touchdowns. This team has all the talent you can imagine for the tier they're playing in.
Flamafu?
Yeah.
It's a very good team. They played well. Like, the game was close, but it was one of those games that sort of got away from them in the second half.
So I've explained what I think is the issue with Flamafu all season long. Have you noticed anything specifically that you can pinpoint that they can work on in seasons moving forward?
It's... Like, I don't want to blame the quarterback because I don't feel like that's the only issue. Mm-hmm. I feel it's part of the problem. Their defense is good. They make some plays. They turn the ball over. But their quarterback is a bit too dependent on the big plays. Right? Like, he's looking for those game-changing plays. Like, Tomokutsu, seven catches for 137 yards. That's 20 yards a catch.
Yeah.
On average. So he's looking for him on deep throws more often than not. And he doesn't even have 50% completion percentage. If it's just a matter... He has so many athletes on this team and so much talent that if you just get the ball into somebody's hand on a short pattern that's easy for them to complete, they're going to move the chains by themselves because these receivers are good.
And the other thing you mentioned to me once, Simon, is if you leave yourself too many third downs to complete.
Yeah, that's also what happens. If you take too many shots early first, second down, you ended up with third and long all the time. And then those short throws look good on paper, but don't mean anything during the game.
Do we know if he actually calls plays or if he just says run and get open?
Well, when I believe he does because he kept running similar concepts to us, but he calls plays that are very safe where his throws are almost uniquely to the sideline. Using the middle of the field, it actually removes your speed advantage.
It's tackle plays, right? Like he calls a tackle playbook. A
lot of mirror play. So like his read is because... So, for example, if you run a mirror play where you're running, let's say, hook corner on one side, hook corner on the other side, that means you know he's only going to read one side of the field because he's going to assume that the backside has the same defense.
Yep.
And
which, admittedly, it would.
It would, yes. But so, but then you're playing cover it allows for a rover on defense to be able to make a play by reading the concept. So, if you know that the first read is deep and you take away that deep read and you don't have to worry about the backside, the rover can absolutely bail and crash on the second route, the second developing route. So the other thing, if they take less shots, if they develop plays that work better in FPF, I think they're going to be a very, very good team because the talent is not the issue. Sebastian Dallaire, however, the opposite case. I feel like he's a guy absolutely suited to FPF and really played a great game here.
The whole Dreambreakers team as a whole, they got seven PDs on defense and two interceptions. There's a problem with the stats offensively. Obviously, some of them got doubled because it doesn't make sense otherwise. Mm-hmm. François Desroux's stats are obviously doubled, but still
he
six catches.
More yards than Sebastian Dallaire's thrown.
Yeah. He obviously has six catches for 121 yards and two touchdowns, which is still very good. Dreambreakers, they found something that really works well for them. They understand that this is flag football. You can't get hit if you run a crossing pattern, which is something Flamafu, I think they know, but they just don't want to do. Right? Like, there's certain patterns in FPA, in tackle football, that you don't run because you're going to get exposed. Mm-hmm. You're going to get hit, and you don't want your receivers to get hit that way.
It's also not double because there's only 24 completions.
There's 18 completions.
He threw 18 completions.
There's 18 completions.
But the receivers have 24 completions, so if you divide it by 2, it's 12.
If you only divide François Desroux, it works.
Also, two. All right.
Just him.
Okay.
It works.
All right.
Research. On spot. Right now. Honestly, I just think Dreambreakers, they sort of got on a roll and they played really well. They found a way to come back in the second half. And they adjusted really well to what Framafu were doing. Like, their defense really made some plays defensively in the second half. And their offense found what worked for them against Flamafu. I think it's just one of those games where one play got away from you, you missed a tackle, and then the game just unraveled.
We talk about Flamafu taking deep shots. You have François Desereau in this one. 7 receptions, 242 yards, 4 TDs. That's 20 yards.
The 242 yards is double, though.
Yeah, we just said that twice. But you weren't paying attention.
Correct.
Also, he doesn't have 7 receptions. The stat sheet says 12.
But it's okay. So it's 6 receptions for 140 yards, which is still impressive.
Anyways, moving on. Thank you, Eagle, for that.
But it's different in that the plays called by Dallaire have guys opening at different levels.
It's also him running after the catch.
Exactly.
Not just
it's a guy, him catching full speed as he's crossing over the middle. Again, something where in tackle you might lose your face. It's not going to happen to you in FPF.
A game that really... No, sorry. There's a game that really surprised me, but we might have talked about it last week, the Bruins game. I believe we talked about it last week.
We did.
I'm still surprised that they...
Okay.
Supernovas put up 37 against Bruins.
I was listening to Takeshi 6ix9ine
on the
way here.
How did we talk about that game if it happened on the 22nd?
Did it? On the 22nd?
There's no way.
We didn't talk about it. That makes so much sense to me now. Thank you, Ego, for being yourself.
Nice. Oh, yeah, it's true. We had a
actually paying attention this time.
Thanks, Eags. So, tier 3.
Nice. You got a whole bunch of games to talk about.
Yeah. Thanks for writing a script.
No, but the thing is with Supernovas, I honestly thought they would win this game. I thought they were the best team we weren't talking about.
Yes, but that doesn't mean they're going to beat Bruins. Like, Bruins have a special season this season. Everything works for them. Like, the new quarterback runs the perfect offense for these receivers. They're learning really well, and everything seems to click offensively. This guy's averaging, like, 40 points a game. On the flip side... Yes, Supernova is a strong team. Like, a receiver like Benji Ziegler isn't going unnoticed. Problem is, I don't see them being able to keep up with a team like Bruins. I wasn't expecting them to be able to keep up with 39-37 game.
But the big issue here is they kept getting their hand on the ball. Zach Ziegler got a PD. Spencer Miller got 3. Benji Ziegler got 2. Like, those plays are... Like, there's such high variance on those kind of plays where essentially one of those gets intercepted, Supernova's win this game.
Yes.
And we're not talking about Mathieu Humet's special season. We're like, the season that almost was for Mathieu Humet. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's true. Well, even if the Bruins would have lost this one game, I still would have said that this was a special season for Bruins with Mathieu Humet as a quarterback. Like, it sets them up really well for winter.
Well, I think so. I was just going to say, actually, if you're looking at, because we know this, if you're looking at the Bruins roster for winter 2019, he's actually not on it, and Gabriel Wiseman has been re-added. So this is the Cinderella run, and then everything turns back into pumpkins.
Is he playing for another team?
If only there's a way.
Yes,
there is a way. Yeah, that's why I asked. But
it's just funny that the first impulse wasn't to research. The first impulse was to say, ooh.
Well, I was trying to figure out, like, how would I get that?
And then just the search bar.
But to be fair, not the same. A guy like Mathieu Humet, if he can't, like, there's also a possibility where he's not available.
Yeah.
Like, we assume every guy wants to play every season, but maybe he doesn't want to play winter because he has other commitments.
Yeah. Like, maybe he's a stripper and it's a very busy season because... Maybe. It's wintertime is a good time for strippers.
From what I can tell, he is not on a roster.
Oh, so maybe
can you see if he's a stripper?
Facebook research.
I mean, I can try.
Figure it out, Eags. Los Banitos beat Pigeon Squad.
Yep.
That I'm not surprised about. I think Los Banitos as the defense.
Honestly, Pigeon Squad had a nice little season.
They had. But
I didn't think very much of them.
I just think this was a bad draw.
They beat Wincy Power... And they just everything clicked and they were great. And Ryan Vanstedt is an absolute monster. Like, I've said it a million times on the show, he was the best acquisition of any team for the fall.
Yep.
But Los Banditos are a tough out unless you have a quarterback who either can really make throws over the top, or if you avoid Vincent Benjamin.
But even if you just avoid Vincent Benjamin, you need to be very accurate, and you need to have multiple plays, because those Mandios learn as they go. And so you need to be able to have a sort of like a second playbook in, for the second half, where you bring new plays that they haven't seen, and they sort of catch them off guard.
But Vincent Benjamin also pick six. That's my point.
Also, yeah.
You win by seven.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Vincent Benjamin is going to make plays. Like, he's a very good player. We've talked about him plenty.
And then your point was he can't play in Div 1 because his name isn't known yet, so therefore he can't play in Div 1. Got it.
It's the only reason. Also, nobody gave him a shot yet.
But I honestly, I've watched them play, and there's certain guys I've seen play in Division 5 and 6 where I know. I've seen the caliber in Div 1 and 2. This guy is that caliber player.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think
so. If he plays against Marc-André Desonnier, how quick does he complain?
Probably
instantly.
No, I don't think he's gonna complain. I think he's gonna go back to writing his article and say this guy is very good. He's a monstrous, and then he's gonna say, but he's not a CFL player, so he should be 80-80.
But the thing is, honestly, when it comes to Los Bandidos, the thing we've always said is, that style of offense is not entirely sustainable. You're going to have to be able to throw the ball and being able to run. But that's not the case in this game, because Francis Desrochers was excellent throwing the ball.
This Los Bandidos, they're learning as they go. Like there's a few veterans on the team that used to play in FBF back in the days when we first started. Like Loic Savoie used to play for...
French Toast Mafia is still one of my favorite team names.
They had so many different team
names. Chili Con Carne.
Yeah, they had a bunch like that.
Eagle all ending with FFC. Give me the rest of the food team names at Loic Savoie Stadium.
They're the French Toast one, right?
Yeah, French Toast Mafia. It's chili. Better if you pay attention to the show.
Chili Con Carne, yeah.
Chili Con Carne. I'm trying to find out if Matthew Reed made the stripper. But, okay. Seems and? Like he's not, but okay. He also is a beer pong champion for...
Whoa, Lyle. Honestly, that's a lot of great life decisions all at once. Because not only is he not a stripper, which nothing against it, but good life decision to not be, yeah. but also he's a champion.
Well, male strippers are not as bad.
I don't know that.
They made very good money.
I know one that was a giant cokehead. So that's my assumption for all of them.
You know, you win small, some, you lose some. Size. So fair. Chili Con Carne, fair. FFC. Creme de la Creme, FFC. Also French Toast team. Mafia, FFC. He also played for Blue Balls of Destiny, which is nice.
Not as
there's Green Lantern Corps.
Okay, but now we don't care.
Widowmakers. Yeah, we don't but the care. Big ones were CCC, CDC, and FTM.
Yeah, they were with Widowmakers for a while, but French Toast Mafia is pretty good.
That's a good name.
That's really good.
Simon.
Yes.
The run is over.
I'm very sad. I'm so sad.
It was
sad.
So obvious.
I'm so sad.
What are you watching?
Over the weekend.
Are Bud Knights still the best defense in FPF history?
Wait, which one are you talking about?
Bud Knights.
Oh, I thought we were talking
about... I am. No, I'm saying, I don't know what you've been watching all season. It was very obvious to me. As good as Jean-Guy, honestly, I couldn't be proud of Jean-Guy. I love guys who are assholes on the field. not to the point where, like, you want guys who are dirty, you want guys who are jerks to refs, but they're not. They're not.
No.
They're just trash talkers, which I love. Love that.
They're trash talkers, and they get in people's heads, but they're, honestly, at the end of the day, if you talk to them before or after the game, they're nice guys, and they really don't give a fuck. Like, they show up because they love football and they want to play, but that's it, right?
But thing...
I was so sad.
Explain to us the moment you realized that this was...
I think it's actually when I messaged you, and I was like, no!
No, I was at my cottage, and I got a message from two guys from Broken Ankles saying, so you really picked Jean-Guy over us? We destroyed them. And I didn't even look at the score sheet. I didn't even know. And I was like, I think it was like Saturday or Friday night. I was like, oh, Jean-Guy lost. Oh, the finals are not going to be as fun now. Because I don't care about Broken Ankles.
Your friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
Most of them are actually like real life friends. It's just, I really wanted Jean-Guy to be there.
Talk to me about Alexandre Gertin as a red zone receiver.
He's such a big guy.
Yes.
He's such a big dude. Gertin is a very good receiver. Like,
and teams don't take him seriously when they first see him, right?
Of course not. If you look at him, he looks like a goofball. But
he is.
Yes, he is. But if you like, I've played with him before. He's been in FPF for like
100 years,
7 or 8 years. It's 100. Just, he hasn't really been known because he played on teams where he's not the focal point. he's been on lockdown. That's how far he's gone.
He actually threw for David De La Roca's Los Bandidos.
Yes. You played quarterback. Yeah, he stint at quarterback for a little while. He's a nice guy, but the thing is, like, he's like 6'3", 6'4", 250. is just a monster on the
and team. A better athlete though than you think.
Oh yeah,
he's got some of the quickest feet for a guy his size. You know,
he can move, and the thing about him is he's a very tough guy to cover in the lower divisions. Like he reminds me a lot of it's a tough comparison, but he's sort of like a poor man's Paul Lapierre.
Or poor man's Junior Luke. Very poor man's Junior Luke.
Very poor man's Junior Luke. It's
a destitute Junior Luke.
His size makes him a very tough guy to cover, and he understands the game because he's tried pretty much every position.
Yeah.
And I think he found his style as a snapper and a red zone threat, and this is, if you can find a quarterback that's able to use him that way, he's going to be very successful. Problem is, most guys don't, he's playing in lower divisions, like 6'5", and guys don't necessarily use him as that type of player.
Well, also, he used to start or basically line up always as a wide receiver, always on the edge, right? So a lot of those inside routes weren't as available. It was always like the goes and everything you had to get, the comeback routes. Whereas if you're playing center, you really have the option of going wherever you want, boxing people out, getting underneath the rusher, and really creating that separation.
So snapper, to me, is more art than science.
It's
more art than science. It's something I learned by playing the position, in that the cleanliness of your route, the speed and all that doesn't matter as much as how understanding spacing, understanding where you belong on each play, and what the defense is doing and how to free yourself. And the thing with I will say is playing, let's say, like with if you have a guy like Alexandre Cartin, snappers are great red zone targets that low division quarterbacks fear throwing to in the red zone because there's a lot of traffic. But he's so big that there's not a reason to just gun the ball in his chest every time you're at the 2-yard line.
There's a lot of traffic, and it's usually what happens when you're playing lower division. Something I had issues with in the past is, even though your guy technically is open, if you're looking at, you know, that Madden view where you see like the quarterback and you see the entire
field. But the snapper is in the way.
You feel like the rusher's he's open, but the rusher's coming and the safety usually just sits behind him, right? Like he's right there. The guy in the middle is right behind your guy, and he looks like he's about to jump over his shoulder and play the ball. So if you do it one or two times and it doesn't work, you feel like this play will never work because there's a rusher that's crossing over, blocks the pat, and on top of that, there's a guy playing that ball, or guys could be shooting from other positions. So you sort of forget that they can't all do that at the same time.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not all these
scenarios. They don't all know that you're throwing to the snapper.
All these possibilities can't happen all at once. And if it does, then there's like four guys that are open.
Yeah.
Right?
So, which is also awesome.
Yeah, which is also pretty good.
So Pete, do you feel like since you've been a quarterback, it's helped your game as snapper in terms of understanding 100%. Those things? Do you 100%. Think Gertin is going through the same type of experience?
100%. And Mike O'Donnell has told me the same thing. A lot of guys have told me the same thing, in that when you're snapping, you have a similar view of the play as the quarterback. And you kind of see a lot of the things you do are later breaking. Like, so you have to go around the snapper, go under the snapper, but then you're very seldomly the first read, so you see the play break open. And so once you play quarterback and that kind of happens, then as a receiver, it helps you be like, okay, I now understand when Simon is looking for me, for example, what he sees and why he can't see that I'm open. Why is it that not only to throw it to me, but even I'll come back, let's say we played together, I've come back to you and be like, hey, this happened. Why didn't you hit the deep end on the other side? Because this and this happened on defense.
But you see it from a different angle than wide receivers, and then you understand it also defensively, that how snappers run their patterns. So if you're playing, let's say you're playing the flats, you understand that the snapper is sort of like the second guy coming at you.
Yeah.
Right. So if one guy bails out, somebody else is coming the other way, which is usually the snapper, and then you could jump him as a defensive player. But as an offensive player, understanding that, I agree with you that you don't need to be the fastest guy on the field to play a snapper, as long as you understand what's happening. And if you're just trying to be super athletic and beat receivers on one-on-ones, you might actually not be open.
Well, that being said, in this game, Gartin, 2 receptions for 54 yards and 2 TDs. So something doesn't work out there for the short red zone stuff.
But we're speaking specifically about this game. Just saying what he adds to an offense like broken ankles.
Also, there's this thing that's called the fat man tackles.
Yeah,
you're trying to go for it.
And yo, since I lost weight, I don't get yaks anymore. It's the worst. I got deflagged at the 1 6 times this season. It's the worst.
Maybe you should be faster.
And well, that's also not going to happen. I'm 36 years old, man.
So maybe you should put on more weight.
Christophe Chartrand.
Yes.
Where does he go from here?
Listen.
This is the best season by far.
This was a good season for them. This was a very good season for them. They went undefeated. They lost in the semifinals. If this was winter, this would be like a glorified season.
But right? Do you think they want to go anywhere? Not really.
I don't think so.
I think they're happy where they are.
I think they'll be a Division 5 team.
I think they should come forward. Back as a Division 6.
I don't think they should.
Like, not 6. D6.
Yeah, I agree.
D6 team. They'll be a good above 500 team in Division 6.
Agreed.
I think they're going to find more success by playing Division 6. If they move up to, like, the 5B, for instance, they're going to struggle against the better teams, and they're going to have a weaker season. Whereas I don't think Shanky's the sort of team that's actually going to dominate and put up 40 burgers on teams that are new to Div 6. Right? Like, if you're putting a team together, Shanky's not the team that really scares you to play. They have a good rusher. It's a tough defense to play against. But until their offense is able to score 6 or 7 touchdowns on a regular basis, I don't see why they should be forced to move up.
And I think the happy-go-luckiness of the way their team is designed would actually penalize them in Div 5, where, not to say that people take it really seriously, but you know how it is, right? Yeah. Everyone thinks they're like an NFL player in Div 5, so it's like, you know, all the hype and whatever it is, but it's like, you know, people run practices and scrims before the season, and you have your playbook. And then there's Zhangi, who just come and be like, yeah, let's have some fun. I love football.
I think that Zhangi is the perfect Division 6 team.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, so like one of those like communal long-term teams that you've seen.
Exactly, it's a group of friends that just want to have fun. Like,
it's a benchmark Division 6 team that you could put out there and say, if these guys finish 6-4, then we should be all right. I don't understand who comes here. I don't understand.
I think my car is in the way.
Oh, maybe. Oh, it wasn't yours that was parked?
No. I got here after you. Let's see. Also, the show's live. So, Simon, want to carry the show for a few minutes?
Yes, I got this. Is it actually yours or is it mine? Okay. So, I shall carry the show because P's had things to do. He couldn't park properly. It's not super complicated not to park it in front of other people's cars. Anyways, Jean-Guy, I think, like you said, Eagle, earlier, I think it's the perfect Division 6 team. They'll be just fine in Division 6. I think moving forward and this next winter season, they should be able to look at a winning record. I believe Yankees will be able to pull up a 6-4, 7-3 roster. And this is not just me being the Yankee fan. I actually believe they're there now. They weren't there last season.
Let's use this opportunity to switch from one team which you were very down upon them losing to another team you must have been happy about. Of course, I'm talking about MacDo.
MacDo, yes, sir.
So they won 24-12 versus the Bulldogs.
This is as much as I like MacDo, this sort of surprises me. It's their first season. They didn't play their week one game because they had a forfeit against them. So they used the time to practice. And I saw most of the practice, I think it was week two, I saw most of it, and they looked disorganized. Like, MacDo didn't seem to know what they were doing. There was one guy trying to call things on the field and sort of knew what to do, but the rest of the team sort of looked lost. And after I saw, I think, their second, which was their first game, but their second game and third game, and they just looked like a fun bunch of guys. That's why I like MacDo. It's a good team name. They're a fun bunch of guys, and they didn't take it too seriously. But they've really improved since like the midpoint of the season. They've hit their stride late in the season. They managed to get a few turnovers. Their defense is playing well. Their offense puts up just enough to win. In their first round of the playoffs, that was their first round of the playoffs. They got a bye because they were a higher seed, and now they won 24-12. So their defense got it done, and now they're going to play in the finals Saturday against replacements, who, to be fair, is pretty much a team that resembles MacDo.
Totally here the whole time.
Yeah, so I was thinking, so MacDo beats Bulldogs. MacDo now plays replacements in the finals, who's a team that's very similar to MacDo, where it's a fun group of guys that doesn't necessarily have the strongest offense, but their defense bails them out, and their offense just enough.
Yeah, they're fast, they're quick players.
They'll get like 25 points a game ish on good days. And they'll win because their defense is good. And that's sort of what replacements have been able to do. Listen, I'm surprised replacements are in the finals, to be honest with you. I said they would lose to Ox, and then I said
but we're not previewing the Trojans yet.
No. Okay.
By the way, whichever one of you...
Sick transition!
It's the next thing we're doing. We have other games covered, no?
Yes.
I was totally here, so I know.
Which one of you said that Galatine was snapping? You're wrong.
I thought so.
He lets us know. I'm also playing as a slot receiver this season. Done. But thanks for the praise about my snapping abilities.
Snapping abilities are great. Honestly, I was good. Snapper. So I saw them play once this season. He was playing slot. I assumed there was the one game and that you had inside information.
Move back to snapper. You're a better snapper.
I don't know, man. 2 catches, 54 yards, 2 touchdowns.
But then you could have more catches as a snapper and still more yards and touchdowns.
Correct. But Knights... Legendary defense.
Legendary.
Wins 19-9 over Llamas Pajamas. Wanna know why? Legendary defense. The greatest defense in the history of FBF.
96, by the way, not the 9.
What?
I was like, how did they score 9 points?
Oh, 6.
96. They hold the team to 6 points in the playoffs. What's up, Bud Knights? Listen, I was very high on Bud Knights initially for shutting down a team, and then they just played terribly since. So I sort of got off the bandwagon and didn't care about Bud Knights.
Jerk.
Isn't that what I do?
I mean, can you make the case, though, that they weren't going to put up a lot of points anyways?
Who, Lamas Pedramas?
Yeah.
No, I disagree.
I think that's what we said last week, and that I like Olivier Goddard, but the team as a whole just hasn't clicked on
enough. They put 37 in the first round.
Yeah.
That's a lot of points.
Yeah, first round.
Lamas Pedramas put up 159 points in their first 8 games.
Okay, but they put up 37
last round. That includes a 60-0 forfeit. So they literally they put up 99 points in 7 games.
But if you're counting at home, that's 14.14 points.
But 37 last week.
Every week.
Right?
Like, and 6 this week. I mean, yes, 19. Okay, fine.
Oh, sorry, but maybe this is Bud Knight's defense. Showing up.
Look,
they showed up one time in the season, and now they showed up again in the playoffs.
Olivier Goddard is a guy I think has a bright future in FPF. It's just you can tell it's not there. The ideas, the concepts are not there. The delivery's not on time. Yeah, the ball's not well located. Yeah, but there's something there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know, like all these things, it takes time. Like their first season in FPF, it rarely goes great.
And your first season throwing in FPF?
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking quarterbacks.
Okay.
It rarely goes great. Like you usually make a few mistakes here and there, and things don't necessarily go your way. We've seen in the past. We've seen some Cinderella stories. Teams go 14-0 in their first seasons. But it's rare. It doesn't happen often. And then most cases when that happen, these teams don't last for whatever other reasons. So I believe there's something there, but it's going to take a little while. And it's good to see that he's found some success early in the season, like early in his FPF career. And I hope they join in the winter.
They
and
are.
Follow
They're through. Registered for Div 6.
There you go. So I think it's a good place for them to be. It's going to be in this fall season with a nice stepping stone. They're going to be good in Div 6. And they're going to face teams that might not be where they are now. That's going to give them an edge.
Yeah.
Because that's the main thing about fall season is you're playing against a bunch of teams. There's not a lot of new teams in the fall season. So you're playing against a bunch of teams who've been playing FPF for a long time, who knows what they're doing. So you're learning against veteran teams or tougher opponents.
But you learn quick that way.
But that's it. So when you're playing winter and you're playing against a bunch of new teams and you're sort of resetting, but you already have experience, it gives you a nice leg up on a lot of teams.
Yeah. But Knights, though, this was a good game. The thing that worries me, Matthew Kijian in this game, Kjeldjian in this game, only 12 completions, 98 yards, not really a great showing for their offense. Do you think they'll be able to score enough? We'll get into a specific breakdown later, but do you think they'll be able to score enough to win a cup?
Offensively, I think it's going to come down to they're going to have to bend the bend. They're going to have to fall back on their defense a lot and play field positioning. So you might not finish with 200 yards, but you might be able to finish with 4 or 5 touchdowns. This is what's going to matter. You should find a way to run it a little bit more, use his legs. He's a fast guy. He's athletic. He should be able to incorporate that into his offense a little bit more. It opens up the field for him if he starts moving around and running when it's open. His completion percentage is good. It's just the yards are minimal.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't have a lot of room to work with, a lot of field to work with, they should be able to do some damage. I think this game, this is one of the rare games where it's going to come down to the defense being able to give them good field positioning for their offense to put up 25, 30 points and win the finals.
I thought Teen Stars were going to put up a good showing in the playoffs.
They did not.
Freshling showed up and said, "You're gonna learn today."
Oh, they learned a lot.
Matthew Lerner, baby.
I don't think they four actually touchdowns. Learned. I think they just got blown away. 37-14 is pretty much of a beatdown.
Or maybe they learned something.
Freshling's put up 30.
It's also his name is Lerner.
Yeah, but if they put up 30 points in the first half,
he them real good.
So look at this score sheet.
Like it sounds like to learn. Hi.
Looking at the score sheet, the Teen Stars show up late.
Again?
Well, because there's only 4 touchdowns offensively in total for Fresh Lungs, and 37 points is more than 4 touchdowns. So did they start like 14-0 or 12-0?
I mean, the first half is 13-6.
Yeah, but
so
did the game start 12-0 for Fresh Lungs, and then
probably
the Teen Stars just try to keep up and they only have 4 touchdowns? That's
soon we will have better stats.
According to the stat sheet, that's exactly what happened. So
yeah.
Listen, if that's the case, then kudos for Fresh Lungs for showing up on time.
That said, if that's the case, if Matthew Luna didn't even play a full game and threw for 205 yards. And if Olivier Delieres
18 for 22 was
went 6 for 83 and 2 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Which one is most impressive? Matthew Lerner's performance, Olivier Delieres' performance, or the fact that all four receivers, 14 stars, have a name that starts with J?
That's pretty funny. But a lot of guys on that team have four out of six starts with J, so it's a bit biased.
Also weird.
I'm surprised by Matthew Lerner's 18 for 22. Like he's a sort of, we've seen him in the past, he's a sort of quarterback that look like tunnel vision's one receiver and really needs him to have a big game for him to sort of develop. And in this game, he's used three receivers as more than three catches. Right? Mm-hmm. Three receivers that touchdowns and more than three catches. So he's starting to learn how to spread the ball a little bit more and use different patterns to get different guys open. 18 for 22 is a very good stat line. 18 for 22, 205 yards. He had a very good game against Teen Stars. And listen, if Fresh Lung's able to play this way on Saturday, they might actually win the finals and not need his brother.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing for him. Like, it's a nice way for him to learn. For him to learn.
That's right. No, the thing is, I was talking to Justin Lerner at the field one day, and he was just there watching Matthew Lerner play, his brother. And I said, you know what? I think this is possibly the best thing for him to develop as a quarterback.
I think so, too. I think he was a sort of a crutch where he knew he had to use him because he's the best player on the field, but that doesn't allow the quarterback to learn and progress as a quarterback. To Matthew and progress.
I was going to do that every time you said, just because you kept repeating the same word.
It's awesome. Also, we're getting hate mail.
Nice.
Cool.
Dagenais is vintage Dagenais, outdoing the Dagenais from 2 years ago.
Wow, that's tough because that's the worst level of Dagenais. It's the darkest timeline Dagenais.
Thank you, Mokan. I love you.
Mokan!
To be fair, 2 years ago, he didn't break down the rusher of the wrong team. So replacements put up points. They beat the Trojans 30-14. Is this more to say about the replacements' offense or the ineptitude of the defense they played against?
138 yards passing, 40 yards rushing. That's a combined of 178. That's all replacements' offense playing well. Like they scored 5 times, 180 yards. They basically drove the field every single drive.
Mm-hmm.
This is replacement finally having an offense. I've been knocking them every week, shamelessly saying their offense is not very good. And they proved me wrong. They played well. They managed to get the ball back multiple times, 2 interceptions.
11 for 18 by Frank Teole-Colatrella. Very good outing for him.
It's good. And it's something that they need to incorporate more in their team is the whole like rushing aspect of it. He's fast. Yes, fast receivers. They need to run more because it's helping them develop as a quarterback.
That said, when they run the option, it's not super effective.
I didn't say running the option. I said run as a quarterback.
I don't know if they've run that a ton this season, but I've seen them play in the past, and I was like, yo, that doesn't work in FPF.
No. Can you guys refresh my memory? Is this the first team comprised of free agents from a couple of years ago that stuck together?
I don't remember.
Replacements?
Yeah.
Is that why they're called replacements?
I don't remember.
I thought that was the team. I'll have to check. But I remember like our first time we did the free agency, by the way, December 3rd, if you guys want to come check it out, the Monday night.
No, I don't think.
I'm finally off from FPF.
No, I don't think that was them.
Oh.
Because replacements have been around for more than a year, right?
It was the year before that.
Oh, maybe.
If this is the same core that stuck together, that would be pretty cool.
Send Frank a message and ask him. I should. He'll know.
Yeah, he'll answer pretty quick usually. So you can do that.
Honestly, I'm surprised. I'm impressed with their offense. I think they played well throughout the last few weeks. They've impressed me back and back weeks. And listen, if they're able to keep up putting up 30 points and their defense keeps playing the way they are.
That's what it's going to take.
Their defense is good, right? Like they've never had problems defensively, but it's offensively bad.
Eagle, I need you to list the first bowl game because I never remember who because I hate the names of the bowl games.
You're talking about the actual bowl games.
Yeah.
The
ones in FPF.
No, but because we did some last week. That's why. Do you want to do those ones again?
No, the ones we haven't broken down yet.
We did some
last week. You can list the games and then we'll break down the games.
I understand.
Okay. Again, the whole thing of naming them after active NFL players, active FPF players, I find very bizarre.
They're all active.
Mostly.
Well, there was a few names that were not active anymore.
Who?
Like Nathan Taylor.
Okay.
Well, I mean, yeah, but not
but like, there's a few guys. There's a few guys from like Rainmakers also that don't play.
I mean, but also I don't know. Just name me enough to play. I
agree with you. We've had this debate.
I mean, the NCAA figured out, hey, let's put sponsors everywhere.
But we don't have sponsors. So speaking of, if you want to sponsor FPF,
give us money or we'll take it. What?
Send me a message. We'll get it figured out. It's actually not going to go in my pockets this time.
You're going to have to give me a few seconds, so keep stalling.
Man, so much stalling. Yeah. Yeah. For the second time tonight.
Good luck checking the website right now, by the way.
I know, I'm realizing that too.
Sounds like a you problem, Eagle.
Nope, sounds like
very much a you problem.
Guess who's getting nasty,
we could talk about the first... We could talk about the first matchup. I just don't know the bowl name. It's Boundary Zaw against 2HD.
Okay.
Tier 1. I just don't know the bowl name.
In one of the bowls.
So
worst possible matchup for Le Boundary Zaw.
Yes.
Because.
If Boundary Zaw would have played lightweight instead, we would have been crushed. Like, it's a sort of offense and defense that Boundary Zaw excel at playing against.
Eagle, what's this bowl called?
So we already did the Theo Ajayi bowl, right?
Yes.
We already did
Two and a half dance. Where are we at?
Two and a half dance.
He doesn't listen.
No.
Does it?
No, we didn't do. No, because we didn't do the Dream Breakers.
We're in tier one.
Yeah.
Dream Breakers don't play tier
pew,
one.
Pew, pew, pew.
So, tier one, you have Theo Ojea and you have Nick Arsenal-Hum.
So, it's a Nick Arsenal-Humble.
It's the Nick Arsenal-Humble.
Yes.
But we have two and a half dance play against LeBron Lizar, correct?
Yes.
There we go. Yeah, we're all on the same show.
Okay. LeBron Lizar, the thing is, it's a very strong team. Comprised,
revised,
made of a bunch of veteran from FPF that played in Division One for a very long time. So it's very athletic players that are used to playing man one on ones and winning matchups the football way. When they play a team like Two and a Half Dan, which I believe they have this season, Eagle, can you pull up the?
Yeah, it was an epic game. It was a game of the week.
You're gonna do it anyways. I don't care. I
can't pull it up.
It was game of the week.
We'll figure it out.
It was game of the week. And Two and a Half Dance were five players.
And
it was a competitive game. It was sick. It was one of the best games of the week we've ever seen.
I don't remember watching that. Maybe I should dig it up.
Yeah.
Mitch somewhere.
Interesting. I believe it was while you were out of town, to be fair.
Oh, okay. So, anyways.
Cozumel. Right? No, Croatia is where you went.
Yeah.
I knew it was a C place.
That's not the same.
No.
It's in Mexico.
It starts with a C, though.
True. So, anyways, I just think that Boundary Zaw, I have the potential to play aggressively against Two and a Half Dance and shut it down. But they'll get frustrated because of what it looks like and what it is. And we've talked about this last week. When you play Boundary Zaw, how do you beat them? It's by frustrating them early in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be like a sort of a testament to their patience and their discipline. Can they stay disciplined? Because their offense is going to score. I have no doubt that Boundary Zaw is going to be able to put up points against Two and a Half Dans every single drive. But then so does Joey Taylor. So it's going to be who makes the first mistake, whether it's Joey Taylor that doesn't manage to frustrate the other team enough, or Nick Chantomo, who has a brain fart that he does sometimes. It's a typical Division One team or, you know, strong Division Two team playing against what Joey believes is a Div 3 team. Right. So if Two and a Half Dan wins this, then there's no reason for Joey Taylor to ever be in Division 3 again. Right?
Yeah.
And that makes it
the thing we keep hearing.
And even if it's a close game, that means you're able to keep up with one of the best teams in Division 2. There you go, Joey. You're welcome.
It's the hardest thing is there's a perceived difference. Like, there is a difference between Division 2 and 3.
Yes.
It's a huge gap. I don't think it's a huge gap.
I think
we perceive it to be a huge gap because it's always been that way. But the level of play of guys like Sean Avram and like Joey Taylor. And the systems
I don't think it's
that
the quarterbacks
bringing in.
The problem.
What?
I think it's not the quarterbacks the problem. It's something we've discussed before with
is a lack of players.
It's Division 2 is made of like 50% of Division 1 players, right? It's Division 1 wants to play on the second team with different guys with friends, or Div 1 is my competitive team, Div 2 is my let's have fun team. The same way a lot of guys do in Division 3 and 4, 4 and 5 and so on. The thing is when you're moving up from Division 3 to Division 2, you want to add to your team the same way you do when you're moving up from 5 to 4 or 4 to 3. The thing is when you there's not a huge pool of players that want to play Division 1 and 2 or are able to. And guys are not necessarily looking out for the up-and-comers. Let's say, like you mentioned, the Vincent Benjamins of this world. The guys that we
so I'm saying, so maybe the key for say, Joey Taylor, Sean Avram. And Sean Avram has done this before, by the way. Going to get Jordan Lard, for example.
Yeah.
The key is not looking at the divisions ahead of you, but maybe looking at divisions below you, yes, for scouring for that talent.
If you could find one or two guys that are willing to play in higher divisions, they're going to give you a shot, right? Like, if your rating's there, guys are going to trust the system and say, okay, if you're, we'll give it a shot because what do I have to lose? Worst case, we have a bad season.
Yeah.
And it's not that bad. Like, if you actually watch Division II games, yes, some teams are very good, but some aren't.
But as I'm saying, in general, I feel the gap is closing because with more players entering the league,
yeah, the gap is
there's
closing,
more good players entering the league as well.
But it's the whole I can't find guys to play with
but you can.
Argument. You can, but guys don't want to. But it's the same thing you do. You don't want to play with guys you don't know. At the end of the day, I want to play with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
My friends already played Div 2. I can't play with them because they already have a team. So me moving up means I have to build a new team, which is not what I want to do.
Fair.
It's a tough argument. I understand it. I understand the both sides. It's doable, but I understand that you don't necessarily want to do it. So you see sort of a... Well, in French, was a stang, but I don't know, English, I don't know what to say. And I understand Joey Taylor's argument. I just believe he could be successful in Division 2.
I think so as well. And I think the... Like I said,
more so than Sean Abram.
Like I agree. And A, because he's better. And B, because the system... I'm telling you, I'm not joking when I say this. The system Joey Taylor has brought to FPF has changed FPF in a way no one would have expected.
100%.
And I don't... Like, I've told him this, and I don't believe he even recognizes the impact he's had on FPF.
He doesn't. I remember watching 2.5 Dans a while back, like 4 years ago. And making fun of that system, that it's not, mm-hmm, you know, it's not going to
work
for a long time.
It did. And it's not going to work when they move up, and then it did. Yeah. And then it's not going to work when they move up again, and it did.
Because nobody really found how to stop it efficiently.
Well, holding.
But you say
you
that.
You need to hold.
You say that, which, again, if you talk to people who won game against Joey Taylor, oh, it's easy to beat them, but you won 43-37.
Yeah. Oh, they're going to score anyway.
Right? Like, the point is, oh, it's easy to beat them. Not really. You put up 43 to win. It's not like you shut them out to 12 points and you just put up, you know, 4 touchdowns and win the game.
Yeah.
It's not an easy game to play. You have to go score for score with them the whole way, which is essentially what it is when you play the finest.
Eagle, next game.
The next game is going to be the Kevin Wyeth Bowl. And this is going to have, I believe it's SWAT versus Sweat and Beers.
So Kevin White is not playing in the Kevin White Bowl?
He's not.
I heard a rumor about that. He was very mad. He wanted to play in the Kevin White Bowl.
No, he wants to win all of them. He wants to have every single name. Like a notch on his belt.
He should actually get like... he should go to like a deluxe costume shop and have like fake heads made and mount them in his like
what
basement.
What I'm going
like
to do is next fall, I'm going to call him up and say you should play with me in the lower divisions and then you could win the lower bowl because you're going to throw for this team.
But the problem is nobody likes you.
I understand. I know.
Nobody wants to be near you.
I know, that's the problem. It's the only reason why.
It's the only reason. The thing is that...
I can't look it up.
I can't look it up either. We're kind of going blind, but it's okay. The thing is, with all the divisions, I felt that Tier 2 and Tier 1 had the biggest gap between them.
Yes.
And it's awesome that SWAT was able to move up. And what's been impressive is...
They move up. SWAT stayed in the same pool.
I understand. But they're able to arise above their challenge and still make it to the bowl game despite playing competing against potential tier one teams that have the best,
that
the better talent
down against them.
Exactly. And so it shows that even at that, even with that big gap, it's still closer than we thought it was.
SWAT is it's a good team made of guys who've been in FPF for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Sean Aney's been in FPF for longer than we have. Gino DeFazio has been in FPF for longer than we have.
Who's got a deeper roster though?
Deeper roster? I think SWAT has
I disagree.
I think Sweat and Beers has a deeper roster because SWAT is more top heavy.
Yeah.
And
SWAT have two phenomenal players in Sean Haney and Isaiah Lard.
Yes.
And a lot of very good players. I'm not disparaging against
Alexandre Blair is very underrated.
Mm-hmm.
He played that one team that played in Div A last spring that we all mocked.
Mm-hmm.
He was a snapper. He's a very, very good player. The problem is they're
freshman?
Yes, that's it. The problem
have no
here the problem here is you're going to face a team that is good. It's going to come down to can Isaiah Lard shut down Robbie Robinson.
I don't think he will. Because the ball comes out of Robbie's hands so quickly.
That's the thing. So if Robbie tries to move, Mm-hmm. He's going to find a matchup that he's going to lose every single time. Isaiah Lard is going to win that matchup if he tries to move, run around, and buy mm-hmm. time.
I agree.
If he gets the ball out quickly, then you're going to see Isaiah try to make plays, because that's what he's done all season. Is if you actually watch him play, it's very successful, don't get me wrong, and the stats are amazing. But it's a little bit egoistic when he tries to jump a route, because that means he's not rushing. Right? Yeah. And then the defense falls apart. If the guy pump fakes and Isaiah Lard jumps, then nobody's rushing and the quarterback has all day. And this is something that Robbie's going to pick up very fast. So if Isaiah Lard's going to have to stop doing it, he might be able to do it once or twice.
Well, between the no-look passes, the pumps, and the ability to get the ball out quickly, Robbie Robinson's going to be a tough matchup for Isaiah Lard.
Yes,
I believe. Isaiah Lard hasn't experienced all season.
But it's also funny, it looks like this is like 2008 or 10 years back, where Gino DeFazio plays against Robbie Robinson
yeah.
quarterbacks.
Well, what's interesting there is I didn't think much of Sweat and Beers because all season long they never really had their full roster.
Yep.
And then when we played against them, for example, it's like, oh, looking across the field,
they
win every matchup. So
they're a juggernaut team when they're playing weaker opponents. It's just
but even if they're not, the whole team, they don't have a weak spot on the team.
No,
the whole
really.
Team is solid. The whole yep. team is good. Maybe they don't have a star like Isaiah Lard, like Sean Haney, yep. but the team itself is good. The one thing I will say is Gino DeFazio will be able to pick on what Sweat and Beers do on defense.
Oh yeah,
it's too obvious.
It's going to be a high scoring game.
Yeah,
because
I think that favors Sweat and Beers.
I don't believe either's defense is going to be able to stop the other team's offense. I think both quarterbacks are smart enough to know how to play against what they're going to play against. It's the sort of defense that they're going to excel against, and we might have the highest scoring bowl. This might be the highest scoring bowl we're going to have. All put all together.
And Robbie Robinson once lost the semifinal game where the two teams combined scored 80 points and he lost by 1 point.
It's so crazy.
Yeah. Eagle, next game.
The next game is going to be the Carmen Pelliche Bowl, and this is going to have Dream Breakers versus, I want to say, did Outlaws win?
Outlaws won.
Then Outlaws.
This is a tough draw for Outlaws. Outlaws had to play EZW. And they got by a point. Defense bailed out Stephen Harper-Saad. I think this is another defense that's going to give Stephen Harper-Saad a ton of trouble.
I think that what works really well for Outlaws is the size matchup mm-hmm. of like Kevin Smuda, for instance. But Dreambreakers have the players to reduce his impact. Nobody can really shut down Kevin Smuda in this sort of matchup.
I will say with the offense that Stephen Harper-Saad runs, and Stephen Harper-Saad is very risk-averse, that If you know what Kevin Smoot is running, you don't need to cover him so much as you need to cut off the route. Mm-hmm. If he sees you breaking, like bearing down on the route, he will not force the ball to Kevin Smoot.
Okay.
That's how you defend Kevin yeah. Smoot in this offense.
Okay. Well, that's the thing. I think Dreambreakers is a fast and aggressive football team defensively. And it's something that might cause issues for Outlaws.
Mm-hmm.
Or on the flip side, they might be very, very successful. I think it's going to be a boom or bust game for Outlaws. They're either going to put up squat or they're going to put up 50. Right? Yeah. Their offense is going to be so efficient that Dreambreakers are going to try to find a solution. It's never going to work for them.
I think it's going to be a lot like Outlaws' first game, where it's the defense. Each defense will make a few plays. The offenses overall will be very efficient, but maybe two punts for one team or an interception, a punt, and the other team will have an interception or a punt.
So a few turnovers.
It's going to be a touchdown game. It's going to be like five or six points decide this game.
Okay.
Do we do picks? What's your pick for the first game? 2.5 Dans?
No, I didn't get any bunnies off.
I'm going 2.5 Dans. You're picking the second game?
What was the second game? SWAT against Sweat and Beers?
Yeah.
Sweat and Beers.
I'm going Sweat and Beers as well. This game. Outlaws.
Give me Dreambreakers.
Give me Dreambreakers as well. And I hate to say, because honestly, I love the guys from Outlaws.
I think it's two good teams, but Dreambreakers are on like a special role at the moment. I think it's going to be a good season for them.
Eagle, next game.
All right. In the next game, it's going to be the Pat Chenard Bowl. And this is going to be Los Bandidos, definitely. And Unknown Talent won, right?
Mm-hmm. Unknown Talent won. And what was the other one?
Bandidos. Los Bandidos.
That's a fun game.
It's fun because Los Mendoza, as we mentioned, their offense is playing well now. What they're doing is successful. Their defense has always been their strongest part. but unknown talent is very good.
Does Alessandro Barazzoni have the FBF knowledge to beat the Bandidos defense? Does he have a play repertoire large enough to beat Los Bandidos?
Unknown talent has enough raw talent to win matchups one-on-one. Not every one of them, but a
just few. Just not the one advanced submission mate.
No, but not every one of them, but a few.
Yeah.
And they'll be able to exploit that well. And they're going to force those Bandidos to move around and change their looks, because if one guy keeps getting beat on, you can't let it happen over and over again, right? So those Bandidos are going to have to scramble and figure it out. And I think they will at some point, but it might be too little too late.
Who's your pick?
Unknown talent.
I am going to go Los Bandidos.
Cool.
There's something special about them this season. And honestly, to me, Vincent Benjamin, I keep saying that he's one of my favorite talents in low division.
He's very good. I think Los Bandidos is a very good team. It's going to come. If it comes down to offense against offense, that's why I'm picking unknown talent.
All right. We have the Rosti Bonablicato Bowl. I can never pronounce that properly. And in this one, we have Bruins versus, I think, Broken Ankles.
Yes.
Yes. Your boys, Broken Ankles. Do they have a chance?
Listen, they think they do, but I don't think so. I don't think Broken Ankles is the sort of team that scores 40. Right? Mm-hmm. From what we've seen from Bruins all season, is they're going to put up 38, 39, 40 points. This is what they've been doing all season, and I don't see Broken Ankles having the defense to shut that down.
Is Antoine Huynh the X factor in that he's not only a fantastic receiver on a team full of very good receivers, but also a rusher who has the ability to shut down a guy like Jonathan Lemieux who needs to buy time to be effective?
Yes. If you're able to get in his head and get a sack early, it's the sort of situation that really hurts him. Although last week when they played Junkie, who has a phenomenal rusher, it didn't seem to affect him at all. Mm-hmm. So, listen, maybe he got over that whole playing against the rusher thing game. I just think that Bruins have a special player in Mathieu Ouimet, and he's going to come out with the MVP at the end of this game.
Four Broken Ankles to win this bowl game, they will need to
put up 40. I think they can. I think the Bruins defense is not efficient enough to shut them down.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't seen Jonathan Lemieux have a 40 burger game in a very, very long time.
Eagle next game. Oh, yeah. Pick. Sorry. That's what I forgot. Your pick is Bruins?
Yeah.
And my pick is also Bruins. Eagle.
Next, we have the Keyshawn Thompson bracket and bowl. I don't know why we call it bracket of sudden.
Bracket bowl. The bracket bowl.
In this, we're going to have
the bowl of brackets.
The Remplacement versus McDo.
McDo.
I'll start with the pick in this one. Throw a little bit off. I like replacements this game. Frankie Teoli Colatrella has developed a lot. He's using his legs effectively. He's not looking to run, but he will take off if it's there. Very good athlete. And the defense on the whole has improved. They are now, their offense is doing just enough to keep them in games. And I think the defense will win it against the inexperienced McDo. You're picking McDo because?
I'm picking McDo. McDo's defense, they slow the game down just enough that they don't need to have 5 or 6 or 7 possessions in a game. They score enough. They get turnovers. They're going to frustrate replacements offense. I don't think they have the playmakers to sort of take away what McDo does well. And their speed is going to be problematic for Frank Teoli. I see this going to be a very close game, but McDo is going to win some in a shutout like 24-18, something like that. It's going to be a low-scoring game that's determined by a single score late in the game.
Eagle, next ball.
This is actually the last one. It's going to be the Paul LaPierre Bowl, and this is going to be Bud Knights versus Fresh Lungs.
So, well, the legendary defense of the Bud Knights.
The incredible defense of Bud Knights. Find a way to shut down Matthew Lerner.
That's the one. Or will they learn in this game?
Or will we learn that Bud Knights' defense is not very good?
What will we learn in this game?
I believe that Bud Knights...
We've driven that joke so far into the ground. It's got to do not resuscitate on
it. I think Bud Knights has just enough players to take away one or two guys from Fresh Lungs, force Matthew Lerner to go to his third or fourth guy, which he's not comfortable doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see the bad Matthew Lerner for 44 minutes.
So, with Bud Knights, we saw them start off great, then struggle. Now winning two playoff games, how do you think they've developed?
I think it's just a matter of finding the one or two plays that really work well for them and sticking to a smaller playbook.
So, as time went on this season, They, is it safe to say that they learned?
No.
I was trying to beat
Stop.
You.
Stop.
I was trying to beat you once.
Dead.
No. So you're thinking they win this game by Knights? Just to prove that you were right about their defense in the first place?
Yes.
No. Olivier Dallaris is, honestly, no one knows this guy yet, but he is borderline unstoppable on both sides of the ball.
He's good.
He just was underused when Justin Lerner was there, and when Darren McDaisy was there. Olivier Dallaris, to me, is the man. He's going to pose all sorts of problems for them, and Freshlings will win by two touchdowns.
Two touchdowns. Oh, boy. Okay.
Simon?
Yes, it's my name.
You got 90 seconds of heat for us?
Yes. It's like last week's edition of...
I figure your girl shouldn't be the only one to experience your 90 seconds of heat. So every week...
So we essentially Simon, the same joke as last week.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I feel like we did that one before.
Yeah.
Yeah, P's not very creative.
Not tonight. Not tonight. I'm very tired.
Not ever.
I spent all day arguing with someone who wasn't listening, so it was tough.
Correct.
So the other thing is... Every week, we ask Simon to prepare a list of FPF and non-FPF-related topics where he rants, and I try to control myself and not punch him in the face. It's very similar to any time Simon has any intimate moments in his life. It's not long, but it does happen.
Again,
three,
same
two,
jokes.
One.
Word it differently.
So I heard that Legault wants to move the minimum age for cannabis to 21 years. 20 years old.
Oh, Premier Legault.
Yeah, okay. Premier, yes.
Not Steven Legault who we play with.
No. No, it's a... Honestly, if you're just... You legalize pot and now you want to make it even less attractive to buy it legally, it's dumb. Gotcha. It should be younger, not older. But then, anyways.
It goes against what the government's trying to do.
When Tim's coffee price increase becomes news, we have a problem as a society. There's this new thing in France. School without teachers and would be free.
Sorry?
There's this new thing in France. A school without teachers also would be free. I'm very confused.
But how do you learn?
Like well, you know what it is they're just...
No, it's his 90 seconds. Yeah. Shut up.
They have teachers on strike.
In Arizona,
strike is the joke.
In Arizona, a man was found in a mine shaft. He was searching for gold. So he told his friend on Monday, if I'm not back Tuesday afternoon, come look for me. Never telling him where he was.
Nice.
His friend on Tuesday night said, where is this guy? Called the cops. They found the mine workers found him on Wednesday. He fell in a 100-foot deep mine shaft. 100-foot mine shaft. How is he not dead? It's like 7 stories high.
I'd say he's lucky.
For 48 hours.
I'd say he's lucky, but did he find gold?
No. He didn't find squat. It was actually like a copper mine. You don't find gold. A man killed a grizzly in Lake 101 in Yukon.
We'll never know about it, though. We'll never know.
That was pretty much a story. It's great. You won a 101 against a grizzly.
Revenant come to life. Eagle, final thoughts.
This was fun.
Yeah, you paid a lot of attention.
I did. I was too busy trying to yell at people, so I'm trying to make stuff work. If you haven't registered already, registration for the winter season ends next week.
Maybe I should do
that.
Just
make sure to actually go ahead and set that up.
Maybe I should do that.
Yeah, definitely. Like, me too, I gotta do that and everything. So, make sure you do that. New rules coming in. We'll announce that during the captain's meeting in late December. Because you're not gonna hear from us for a while, so I figure I'll give you updates now.
There's not a lot of new rules.
Some changes.
There's one really dumb one.
That we've discussed, and aside from that, it's very minimalistic. Yeah.
But yeah, looking forward to winter. Looking forward to some time off, so I don't have to deal with you too much.
Christmas
enough,
time!
But still some.
Simon, final thoughts?
So I was hoping for more time without you guys because I'm tired of seeing your faces. I'm gonna see you guys this Saturday at the finals and then the Christmas party, and then we might be able not to see you guys for like a week or two before we're stuck seeing each other again. It's not long enough.
This week, am I going for one, going for two? I will touch on this Saturday, my first point, and my going for two.
Okay.
I'm gonna be very aggressive. Going for two, and my first point here, we're doing something a little different. We don't have Brossard as we normally do for the finals, so we don't have Wi-Fi. Instead, we're going to be broadcasting on Instagram in our Instagram stories. We will be posting videos all day long, clips from the games, reactions from players, that kind of stuff. We want to be a party. We want to be fun, festive environment. And if you're playing in the games, definitely come look for myself, for Eagle, for Simon. Come talk to us. Feel free to be hype. Feel free to be sad. Feel free to be emotionally vulnerable. Oh. We'll take it all. We'll take it all. That's what we have planned this year. It's a little bit different from what we've done in the past. Kind
still
of forced our hand
them
by
like Game of the Week style.
Yeah, it's still gonna be filming Game of the Week style, but we're trying to add a live element to it as well, and we'll see how that goes. We'll see how it goes for next fall, as the format is different from our normal seasons. My second point going for two is it's Christmas music time, ladies and gentlemen. It's been awesome. I'm cheerier, just as it's
like
just
Christmas music.
Absolutely, all day long. Yeah. Spotify all day long. Eagle is just killing my vibe now by cutting the calling the album music. Maybe if you can replace it with some non-copyright Christmas music.
I was expecting Christmas music to drop in now.
Either way.
Completely not my fault, actually. It just crashed.
Guys, this has been fun. Honestly, it's been exhausting. This is the longest year of my life.
Really? It's every year is the same, right?
No, it's not. Because of other things outside of FPF, as well as all the added responsibilities with FPF, with fall season now is the second year. It's tiring, but honestly, it's a labor of love. I love what we do. Thank you, Simon, for putting up with me every week. Yeah. Thank you, Eagle, for actually putting up with me every week. but most of all, thank you all for letting me be myself. What's going on? What are you doing? Oh, there we go. I'm instantly cheering. How are you not cheering?
Go back to eating potatoes.
Eating potatoes? Oh, the carbs media, yeah, that would be good.
So, do you guys think that we're only sick of each other and not the audience is sick of us?
Well, I think there's an attrition. Honestly, I think there's an attrition. Especially with me. I'm not a likable person.
I think it's also part of the whole, there's too much FPF and people need everybody needs a break from us.
Yeah.
Nobody needs a break from us. We're part of your lives forever.
It's pretty similar, it's firing.